Welcome back. Greg Silverman here, part three of CIOs and Bowties. We are interviewing fascinating guest Anesu Mklanga, who is currently in Harare, Zimbabwe. And look, Anesu, this line is crystal clear. So, you know, I guess 10 years ago, we would not be speaking like this, just so nonchalant. And so that's great. That's progress in of itself. Tell us about some challenges that you face in running a family office in Africa. And, you know, I'll just give a bit of a primer here. So maybe some governance issues. I know a lot of wealth in family offices generally is derived from an operating company. So maybe speak about, and I think in your instance, it might be similar, you know, diversification. Let's start there, and perhaps also explain for our listeners, because I think this is really key, the family dynamics that exist just generally in amongst African cultures relative to, you know, the US or European cultures.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you so much. Great question. I think just in terms of the challenges of family offices in Africa, the reality of it is Africa is probably the most difficult region to do business. But if you are patient, it's probably the, you know, the place with the greatest promise as well. So that's the challenge. We don't have the infrastructure that is as good as the rest of the world. I know you said you're hearing me crystal clear right now. I'm in Zimbabwe at the moment, and that speaks to, you know, the improvements in telecommunications. But I can tell you right now that we've been facing a lot of power outages as well. I just happen to be in an area where we don't get power outages. So you know, those kind of challenges are very, very real challenges that I think we need to be able to address, which really affect running a business in a big way. So it's infrastructure development, it's issues of governance, it's political issues. You know, we are still in this country struggling regarding the political situation, and there's still, you know, some sense of internal instability. But I can tell you right now, that aside, things continue to move forward, and which is a very, very strange thing to me. So we do have challenges on the continent, financial services that are not well developed. So you find exchange controls, for example, are really, really tight. And that can make for challenges when it comes to moving money in and out of the country legally. So what you find then in the end is that some people begin to do that illegally, which, you know, some wealthy families do that, which again becomes a problem because then you can't account for what's going out. And I think just not having financial service structures that you can trust is the Achilles heel of African economies. And we really need to be able to develop that so that we can then develop the economy, get good FDI flows. If we also strengthen our governance structures, we'll be able to gain more trust. But I think everything needs to be balanced. In terms of perception, and you really have to be on the ground. So those are some of the challenges that you face as a business. And then when it comes to family dynamics in Africa are always very, very challenging because the reality of it is that as a woman particularly, I think you will find that you have less of a voice than as a man in a family, because that is just a lot of, you know, that's just the dynamic. That's just the cultural dynamic that you have across the continent.
Yeah, understood. Mm.
So that your voice then is sort of not as well represented. So it's not an issue of merits. It's more about whether you are whether you're a man or a woman. You know, so the dynamics then become challenging in that regard.
It was also sketched out to me not so long ago by someone who mentioned to me that, and again, just, you know, hit me over the head if I'm speaking out of turn here, but essentially you've got the patriarch, as it were, who is really tending to, in some instances, very, very large families, very large families. And then beyond the first concentric circle of the, let's say, the direct family, there is also the tribal family. You know, I hope I'm allowed to say that. But, you know, so essentially, you're looking after a village, basically, if you're the patriarch. And you have to show preference to your village versus another village. And so I guess the tribal lines and the family lines are deep and broad as it comes to, let's just say, you know, Zimbabwe or South Africa, for example.
Absolutely. You'll find this in all, I would say, most African society, that you have that patriarchal system, and then there's also that issue of the tribal family, the nucleus, and the broader tribal community. Those things, regardless of how industrialized African economies have become and how people have moved out from sort of the communal areas and moved into the city or moved abroad, even those things don't leave you when you are African. Mm-hmm. And you know, you find that you still have to think about what is happening back home and how that has now sort of played itself out, at least within Zimbabwe, is that we are able to, I suppose, continue to function as an economy in the way in which we do, partly because of the investment of those who have left the country. So they continue to send money to their family in Zimbabwe to support them. And, you know, that has helped as well. The economy, just sort of at a very basic level. And so in terms of, you know, those dynamics, I think it has been quite beneficial to us.
Right. Okay, let's switch last gears here. Let's switch to investment management, which is key to our listeners. Let's start off with kind of what I call perhaps the wealth management hub of Africa, and that is the beautiful island of Mauritius. So is that, what would you compare Mauritius to? Is it akin to kind of a Delaware in the US or British Virgin Islands? I'm just curious, as a hopping off point, is that how do a lot of family offices kind of orientate themselves in Mauritius as a hopping off place?
Yes, I think you're absolutely correct there, Greg. That is what Mauritius is to most of the African families. But the reality of it is that's more to, you know, it's more of an entry level. You will find your larger family offices in Africa prefer Switzerland, Isle of Man, Cayman Islands as jurisdictions. Mauritius is a very well-regulated jurisdiction, which for some is good, for some it's not as great. There's better access, for example, from, you know, for governments to that jurisdiction. So it is a good offshore jurisdiction, but it just, I think, is in too close proximity to the continent and to government. So you find that you have perhaps more of your high net worth individuals going there as opposed to your ultra high net worth.
Okay. That's interesting. I was not aware of that. Okay. So let's co-join a few parts here that I said we'd come back to. You mentioned that it's becoming more difficult to raise capital from US and Chinese investors. Let's start there. Why is that the case?
But I think when we look at US investors, it's the brand. It's the Africa brand. It's the Zimbabwe brand, for at least for Zimbabwe. So, you know, Africa has always been seen as a place that is difficult to invest in, the risk. It doesn't have the same comfort that the American market has in terms of, you know, determined returns. And I think it's also a case of, you know, just the whole shift in politics in the US, which is favoring more the development
domestic
of American products within America, which I think is actually a very good thing as well for America if it's done correctly and if it has the right support behind it. You see that the same sort of move with Brexit. So these different countries and regions, they're looking more to themselves. And now with the US-America trade wars, US-China trade
wars,
those kind of dynamics as well ultimately impact the flow of capital to a place like Africa. I think the Chinese have a better risk appetite. They do well wherever they go, and that's incredibly admirable. I'm interested to find out whether they will continue to look to Africa in the same way that they have in the past, or whether they will, you know, focus on developing their own markets much more to sort of to the detriment, I suppose, of Africa, given just the dynamics that are in play right now.
Okay, so capital, while capital is always difficult to come by, it's perhaps a little bit more difficult to come by. You're in the agri space. I'm a big proponent of technology, as I'm sure you are as well. And I think the whole blockchain movement and, you know, the establishing trust through technology versus, just looking at someone saying, trust me, I think that's a great advancement probably for Africa. Where else are you seeing good investments on the continent and in your sphere?
Thank you for that question, because it just gives me an opportunity to introduce a product that I'm currently developing. I'm in partnership with someone else who is also in the technology space from Israel, and we are working on a tech platform for waste management, which will help to facilitate transactions for waste with regards to, you know, governments and big businesses. This is something that I've been working on for quite some time. And I think that that's an area that has a lot of potential. Also, you know, drawing from the agribusiness space, but really across all spectrums. Technology.
Sorry to interject there. What kind of waste management are we talking about? Is it... What kind of waste is it?
All non-hazardous waste that can be accessed by anyone for sort of recycling, whatever the case may be.
Okay.
I think one of the, what people don't realize is, for example, fashion. As much as fashion is my passion, it is a source of great waste. And that is sort of now the biggest issue when it comes to waste. And just being able to manage that, we creating something that will be able to manage that and to, I suppose, support different governments and big businesses in being able to dispose and recycle in a more effective manner.
Okay, that's great. But just by the way, not you, you had your plug, so I'll have my plug, and it's not really a plug, but you know, as you know, I'm quite involved in the hemp industry, the cannabis industry, and you know, hemp is has long been used for textiles and for rope, etc. And recently came across a group here in the US, which is also very focused on the textile business and the more what do they call it, kind of, you know, the renewable side of it. So that's interesting. You seem to have some kin or some common connections around that. Anything else on the investment side that you think is a good opportunity that you see?
I think agribusiness is definitely the way to go when it comes to investing in Africa. You just have to pick your area and what you're interested in and pair that with great technology. I think that will really change the game. Africa is incredibly blessed with good soils, good natural climate that unfortunately sometimes we do have extreme conditions as everybody is having now. But there is so much potential if the right technologies are implemented in the different areas, whether it's logistics or primary agriculture or distribution. And I think this is exactly where Israel is going to play a really important role in the development of Africa. We have this growing population and it needs to be fed. And so there's really a lot of potential there. And what's really great about agribusiness, why I continue to push it so much, is that agribusiness really helps people's lives. It creates jobs, it improves an economy, it improves general well-being of people, their health on a very basic level. Agribusiness is the industry that ticks all the boxes. And so developing agribusiness will support African economies, I think, in an incredible way. But they cannot do it without the right technology and the right infrastructure. And so I think absolutely agribusiness would be where I would say put your investment.
Okay. On that note, wow. So you know, for every problem there's a solution, and a solution is also an opportunity. So that's terrific. So listen, last question, Inesu. You know, before every Jewish holiday, I always seem to get a good yontif email from you, or a chag sameach, you know, wishing me a good holiday. And in many instances, you beat all my Jewish friends and even my Jewish mama to the punch with that one. So what's the link there to your Judaism spiritual side?
Okay, for me, Judaism is something incredibly personal and beautiful to me. I'm actually going through my conversion, and I've been on this process, you know, in this process for a very long time. It's a very complicated, and it can be long and difficult. I always say, when people ask me about my journey to conversion, from Christianity to Judaism. What happened? How did you do that? What led you to this? And they always say, you know, a Jewish neshama will find its way. And I've always felt Jewish when I was...
Neshama being the soul, the spirit, just for our listeners, yeah.
So when I, you know, ever since I was in high school, I always felt Jewish. It was a very strange thing. And then as I learned from other people's conversion experiences, they had the same sort of experience. They always felt this way, which sort of speaks to, you know, the authenticity of your journey and why you're attached to what you're attached to. But over and above that, I just think the reality of it is that Judaism is the oldest religion. And there's so much truth in that, particularly when you look at the teachings of Kabbalah. You really understand the depth and the essence of what Judaism is. I don't think many people appreciate or can even understand just how much Judaism can explain every single aspect of your life, and how that can change the trajectory of your future and your prosperity. I just find for myself that this has given me so much grounding, and it has really helped to provide me with a basis in which I run my business and do what I do in a way that is as a custodian of what Hashem, God, the Creator, has purposed for me, as opposed to, you know, just on a superficial level. And so it's incredibly beautiful. It's incredibly powerful. And, you know, I think it's definitely something that is misunderstood, perhaps because there's so much mystery to it. But I'm really, really grateful for my journey. And, you know, I just pray that continues.
Yeah, well, very good. That's very profound, and congratulations, and I hope it continues and fulfills everything. And well, there you have it, folks. It's not all about money with the CIOs and bow ties. We go in pretty deep over here. So listen, Inesu, thank you so much for your time. Really a pleasure to be speaking to you. Let's close off. I know we'll put this in the show notes, but if any of our listeners would like to get hold of you, they can certainly, you know, reach out to me. That's not a problem. But is there any way that you prefer them to contact you?
Well, I'm available on WhatsApp. So my number on my WhatsApp mobile number is +263 78 391 0208. And they can also reach me via my personal email, which is anesubb@gmail.com. So that's anesubb@gmail.com.
And of course, LinkedIn is also a good tool. So.
Exactly.
All right, Inesu. Wonderful. Listen, thank you so much. And let me wish you a good afternoon. And all the best, and a lot of hatzlacha, and a lot of prosperity and help to you and your family.
Thank you so much, Greg. Much success to you, too.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.